the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis on the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson, Associate Director for Communication Technology and Programs at KEI. As we wind down this year, KEI is gearing up for Korean American Day, which will take place on January 13, 2016. This year's celebration will honor Korean Americans who have shown excellence in culinary arts. Last year, we honored Korean American athletes. And this episode is an interview with Toby Dawson, one of last year's honorees. Toby is an Olympic bronze medalist and now coaches the South Korean ski team. He sat down with KEI Senior Director Troy Stangerone to talk about his childhood, how he got into skiing, and how he has transitioned from athlete to coach.
Hi, welcome to Korean Context. This week we have Toby Dawson, Olympic bronze medalist and 2015 Korean American Day honoree. Mr. Dawson, you grew up in Vail, Colorado. Vail is known for skiing. Your parents were ski instructors. Was skiing always your passion, or were there other sports that you might have chosen?
My parents were always supportive in everything I did when growing up. I played ice hockey growing up. I played soccer. And skiing was something that we actually did as a family. And so skiing was a big part of what we did growing up. All of our holidays would be going on ski trips and things like that. So everything was kind of based around skiing. But if I did want to dabble in other sports, they were definitely supportive in those too.
As you became more competitive in skiing, what type of role did your parents play in shaping your career?
My parents weren't ever pushy. It was kind of the best thing for me, I think. They always supported me. They wanted to, you know, as long as it looked like I was working hard and going after the goals that I wanted, they would support me financially with whatever I wanted to do. So I just had to show them the commitment, and then they were more than willing to help me out the rest of the way there. So they were definitely inspiration for me, and they helped me out so much. But I think those are the lessons, you know, not pushing me, not trying to be the parents that are trying to get glory out of their kids. Just whatever I wanted to do, they would support pretty much.
Beyond your parents, were there any other skiers who you consciously modeled yourself off or were an inspiration to you that you wanted to try and be like them?
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, I watched a lot of different mogul skiers. One of my favorite mogul skiers was, his name was Sergei Shuplitsov from Russia. And the reason I liked him, he was just very technically sound. He kind of took mogul skiing to a new level, and everything he did was very robotic. And I enjoyed watching that part of his technique and kind of tried to model a lot of my technique and my philosophies off of what I watched. And I had this videotape, and I called it the Bible, and it was an old VHS tape, and I had recorded all my favorite ski runs on it. And I'd just, in my room, just watch it day and day and day, day after day. And basically now, my mom still has the tape, and you can watch it now, and you just see black lines because I've rewound, slow mode, play it again. And I studied a lot, and I think that's kind of where I got my own skiing style, is through watching a lot of these top athletes and trying to pick out the bits and pieces that I like best of each of them and creating my own style.
Sounds like you also were sort of a pioneer perhaps on video, because we hear a lot of athletes using video now, but it seems like, you know, at that time that would have been a new thing.
Yeah, it was a new thing. Well, it was a pain in the butt back then, because you had the big VHS machine, and just trying to record, you had to have a double slot thing. And so, you know, I had to talk my parents into buying one of those for me so I could record onto another VHS. But yeah, it was something that I was really into, and I really studied the slow motion aspect of things and really trying to break apart each little motion. And that's kind of where all sports have ended up these days. You know, everything from a golf swing to any sport, everything's broken down into slow motion. So I guess I was maybe a little bit ahead of the curve on that.
As your career progressed, you took part in U.S. national competitions and in world-level competitions. What were some of the biggest challenges sort of early in your career in terms of competing both domestically and internationally?
I think that there weren't a lot of big challenges. My first World Cup was in 1999, right after I made the U.S. ski team, and I finished fifth place, which was like an unbelievable result for somebody that's just making it onto the World Cup circuit. But I believe it's the way I was brought up, and While I was training as a younger athlete, my parents actually sent me to different places. Like, I trained in Winter Park and stayed with a like surrogate family for the winter. Mm. And to be used to or be comfortable not being around my home and like being in different environments really made the travel part of World Cup, which breaks a lot of the athletes because it's so difficult to go to new places, try to fit in and try to get relaxed in those new environments. And that was something that became kind of second nature to me. And I think that was a lot of my success there from that.
Speaking of new environments, the biggest environments would be the Olympics and in Turin in 2006. What was it like just simply being there, like in the Olympic Village, you know, taking part in the athletic competition, seeing the other athletes?
I think that the Olympic experience is bar none something that is the most amazing thing. And we'll all take a lot of great memories from it. But single-handedly, the best moment of the Olympics was the opening ceremonies. To be able to walk out and represent the United States and to know, I didn't even know where they were, but my family sitting out in the crowd watching me walk into the stadium and to be with all these other athletes was a pretty special moment. And the coolest thing is everyone's expectations are like through the roof at that moment, but no one had an Olympic medal at that point. Yeah. So everyone was kind of at the same level. And that was pretty cool.
You're still at a high because nobody's had any disappointment.
Exactly.
On the sort of arena floor and everything, is there a lot of camaraderie between people from the different countries, or do you mostly stay within your national groupings?
You mostly stay within your national groupings. You do get to run around a lot, and you know the whole trading pins or trading like hats and jackets and things like that. You do end up running into a lot of different countries, and you know. You got all your buddies that you compete against from the other countries. I hung out with a lot of like Canadians, Finnish skiers, Swedish, and so they would always like introduce you to like the cool hockey players or whoever else was there. So all your connections kind of like all come together at that one moment, and so you get to meet a lot of people that in normal life you never really get a chance to do. So it's pretty amazing.
Was there anyone who stuck out for you?
Well, it's funny because for us, we don't even get to see the other U.S. athletes. So just to see a lot of the U.S. athletes and to come in on the same bus to the opening ceremonies as them, you know, I was sat right next to like Sean White, who's a pretty big deal in snowboarding, and a couple different hockey players that I loved a lot growing up because I played hockey. To be able to meet all these guys and to, you know, just kind of be grouped together with them was a pretty neat experience in itself.
So the ultimate experience, though, had to be winning the bronze medal. What were you thinking when you began your two skis, and what was it like to actually, you know, win the medal?
It's, you know, I don't want to make it sound bad because I believe that everyone should go out there, and if they have a dream, to definitely chase it as hard as they could. And that's how I took the Olympics. I failed to make the Olympics in 2002, and I think just qualifying for the Olympics in 2006 was kind of a feat in itself, and it was something that I really strived hard to do. But the actual crossing the finish line, I knew that I had a medal. I didn't know what color it was at that point, but I knew I put down a good enough run. It definitely deserved a medal. I got a feeling of disappointment, actually. And it wasn't that I was disappointed in getting a third place or whatever and how much hard work I'd put into it. It was just, it became very real that, what is my next step in life? And it all kind of hit me right when I crossed the finish line. And everyone would think, oh God, you'd be reflecting on how great of an experience it was. But the first thing that crossed my mind is like, oh my gosh, I told everyone I'm done skiing, now what's next? And that kind of was a hard pill to swallow after I crossed the finish line. You know, I did everything I wanted to do, and it was exciting to put it all together at that one moment in time was what I trained myself to do. But once I reached that goal, it was like, okay, now I have to find a new goal because I'll be bored with my life if I don't have another one.
The biggest moment in your life became also the biggest turning point in essence.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of the things you would go on to do would be to be part of the PyeongChang Winter Olympics bid in 2012. How did you become involved in South Korea's bid for the Winter Olympics?
It was kind of an odd situation when I got involved with the South Korean Olympic bid. I actually came out to Korea to film a documentary of my life, like from when I was born, like growing up in Busan, this small port city on the southern tip of Korea, to my adoption, growing up in the United States, and then coming back and kind of meeting my father and getting back to my roots. And the Korean Olympic Committee kind of helped sponsor this documentary. And so during the documentary, I was awarded like an honorary ambassador of the Pyeongchang Olympics. And that was kind of all that was involved with it. However, there was this great guy, his name was Terrence Burns, along with some really big guys in Korea, like YS Park, who's the owner of Doosan. They kind of brainstormed and came up with the idea, you know, let's bring Toby in to help with this presentation. They had been planning this presentation for almost a year, and they've been practicing a lot. And at like the last minute, basically, I got a phone call almost 2 weeks before the presentation and asked if I had time in my schedule to come out and help. Yeah, so that was a very last minute thing, but it was a very neat experience to be able to go out and help with the bid and be a part of the presentation team. But it was really difficult because everyone had trained and everyone was so in tune and knew exactly what was going on. I just kind of showed up, didn't know what I was supposed to say, didn't know what I was supposed to do. And basically I had like a little mini boot camp for 3 days to get me prepared to stand next to all these high-ranking people in Korea and give this presentation and try to sell the Olympics.
In the end, though, South Korea did get the Olympics, so it was a successful pitch, and you ended up being asked to help with their skiing as well and become a coach in Korea. How did that come about?
Well, it was interesting. It came about pretty quick after the bid. During the bid, it was, you know, Korea didn't have success in the, what was it, the 2010 and 2014 bids, and they're really scared to kind of go down that same path again. They always kind of had the majority right after the first vote, and then when they knock out the third and fourth place cities, then all the votes would go to the second place city and Korea would lose. And so Korea kind of understood that we had to win on the first vote, and if it wasn't a landslide, we had a low chance of winning this thing. And I don't know, somehow between, you know, obviously Yuna Kim's great presentation and myself, we managed to sway enough votes that it became a landslide. And it was pretty amazing to walk around after doing the presentation and talking to the IOC members and having them just kind of run up to me and be like, "You changed my vote. I was going to vote for Munich. I was going to vote for this other place. But your story changed it." And it was pretty humbling to be such an integral part of getting all those votes. But so right after that, I became somewhat of a national hero. And then I was approached to what I thought about possibly helping direct the ski team. I thought about it a little bit, but I made a trip out a couple months later and started to seriously talk about it, and ended up getting a coaching position as a Korean ski team coach.
So it sounds like this is very meaningful for you on two levels. One, you're able to play a significant role, and two, it led to a new profession, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, new profession. I was skiing. When I was competing, I always kind of thought, you know, one thing I will never do in my lifetime is coach. What I've learned is never say never, because they'll end up having to do it at some point. It wasn't that I looked down on coaching. It just didn't look like something that ever interested me. But for this particular situation, to be able to pass on my knowledge and to do it for a sport that I truly love and for a sport that I competed in for so many years and put so much hard work, blood, sweat, and tears into, for this exact moment, I think it's the right thing to do.
One of the things about coaching is that, you know, you said you never saw yourself coaching. There are a lot of athletes who, when they try to move into either coaching or management, you know, to me, in some ways, Michael Jordan tends to be sort of the poster child for this, who have difficulties in doing it. Have there been any challenges you've seen in terms of, you know, adjusting from being the person who is coached to coaching the athletes?
I think that, yeah, there's always those challenges. But, you know, my last kind of 2 years prior to the 2006 Olympics, I had my own little separate team where I had my own kind of private coach and my own massage therapist, and I created this whole structure for myself. So I kind of understood it. And the easiest transition of the coaching aspect for me was going back to that VHS videotape. The way I broke it down and understood everything that was going on with my skiing made that transition to be able to pass on and tell somebody and to be able to visually watch someone ski down and give them the information immediately became very second nature to me, because I had done it so much for myself. I didn't rely on coaches so much when I was competing, And I think that made me a good coach. And that definitely helped me in the transition. Now, on the other hand, moving to Korea and to be into the middle of that culture and being very Americanized, those parts of business management and things, that's where like the heads start to butt a little bit. But for the most part, I get along pretty well and get things to happen.
You coached Korea's freestyle ski team in the 2014 Sochi Games. How did they do, and what kind of progress are you hoping to achieve between now and the 2018 Games in Korea?
Well, right now we're really working on consistency. In 2014 in Sochi, I had two girls that kind of finished in the mid-20s, pretty average in my standard. I had one of my male athletes, Jaewoo. He finished 12th at the Olympics, and that was actually a pretty good effort. That was a new Korean record at the time. Just this week, Saturday and Sunday, we just came from Deer Valley, Utah, where we had two mogul events. And Jaewoo got a fourth place finish, which is a new Korean record. And one of my girls got sixth place, which is another Korean record for the ladies' side. So we're definitely steamrolling ahead. But like I said, consistency is the key. Making sure that you're always finishing in the top 12, top 15. Making sure, because it's a judged sport, that they see you all the time. And because of that bias, you need to be up in the top 15. So, you know, that consistency is going to play a big role. And if we can keep these kind of results going, we don't necessarily have to win every event. But if you can kind of be knocking on the door the whole time, they'll definitely be ready for the 2018 Games.
So you said that on the business side, adjusting to Korean culture was sometimes challenging. Have there been any other adjustments to living in Korea? And what do you miss most about being in the U.S.?
I think the hardest things about living in Korea is not ever kind of getting into a routine. Every time I start to fall into one, I have to pack my bags and go on the road for a training camp or do something. We chase a lot of snow during the summer months and go to the southern hemisphere and things like that. And then during the winter, we're always on the road following the World Cup tour. So I think the routine is the hardest part. If I were able to just be in Korea for like 3 or 4 months at a time, I think the whole language barrier and everything would become a lot easier. I think the thing I miss the most about the United States is just the convenience, you know, knowing where everything is. And I just feel like I spend so much time trying to find things in Korea. It's there, but it just takes forever for me to find them still.
A couple of questions to close out. You've clearly broken a lot of boundaries, you know, winning the bronze medal, going back home to Korea after having been adopted and, you know, coaching the national team. You know, you've worked with other adoptees. What do you hope in the long run will be your legacy?
You know, I've never really reflected on what my legacy or what I want to leave behind. I just try to, whatever I am doing, I always try to put in the best effort I can. And that happened when I was an athlete, and that's happening now as being a coach. And that's happened, you know, in like schoolwork and things like that in between. So it's just whatever situation I'm in, I put my best foot forward and try to do as much as I can with it. And I think that always opens up new opportunities and opens new doors. And I think that if anything that's going to be recognized is to have for somebody to see that. I had kind of a weird upbringing because I was born in Korea and then grew up in the United States and then was able to cross those boundaries and be able to make a U.S. national team and then be able to compete for the United States for the Olympics. And so I think if you put your effort in, that you can definitely achieve all those goals and dreams that you want. So if any legacy, I would want people to follow that same kind of work ethic.
And then would that be perhaps your advice to any young aspiring athletes out there?
Absolutely. Don't sit around and wait for things to be given to you. If you want it, you go and get it, and then you'll be ready to have it.
Well, thank you for joining us in Korean Context.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us again next week.